should put this away so I don't get distracted.
Hey, it's Dr. Lisa. I'm here again. It's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I give a shit. I give a shit big time. You know what I'm going to tell you? I want to admit something, okay? I'm going to admit something right here, right here. I'm going to admit something that, like, is so politically, like, wrong. But anyway, I have friends that live in Arlington, and my husband and I are going to the Women's March tomorrow. And I'm actually, like, or I'm on, we're going there tomorrow. We're getting okay, it's Saturday. I get it. But I'm a little, like, uncomfortable because I'm afraid of, like, that I'm not going to be able to pee. Like, this is the whole thing. I'm hesitant about going because I'm afraid I'm going to be in this big crowd and I'm going to have to pee. And there's, like, nowhere to pee. And
this
is the truth of how I feel. This is the coward that I am. I'm sharing that and I'm not hiding it. But anyway, I know it's, like, we can't even... Like, you don't need to hear me talk about anything about what a fucked up time in the planet this is. Anyway, you know what? I'm really happy about this, like, really super awesome guest I have on today. First of all, I just want to say this before I say anything else. He has the fucking incredible hat. The most fucking incredible hat I have ever seen in my entire life. So his name is... Nathan Lee. Hi, Nathan.
Hello.
Did you know, I didn't tell you that when you walked in that I loved your hat.
Oh, I appreciate it. It's my little Firefly reference.
Did you buy it or make it? It looks like somebody made it for you.
A friend of mine made it for me.
A friend made it for you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I used to have this long Doctor Who scarf that I lost when I was on tour, and I posted something on Facebook that I was really upset about losing the scarf. And I get this message from a friend of mine that was like, "What's your address?" And she sent me this.
What's her name? Let's give her a shout out.
Her name is Kristen.
Can you buy them on Etsy or something?
You know, I honestly don't know if you can.
We got to find this out. Anyway, here's the deal with Nathan, folks. So anyway, my group of unemployed people that are home listening to me in the afternoon. Here's the deal. Or maybe you're like really big artists and you know, you don't need to be in a job. Who knows? So anyway, so the thing is that Nathan's publicist, who's on top of it, sent someone at the radio station that has a music show about having him on today because today is the launch, Nathan's party for the launch of his new album, right, Nathan?
Yep.
Are you like, so wait, we'll get into that in a minute. So anyway, so the thing is, I said, well, you know, my show's not a music show, but I would love to do a therapy session on Nathan. And he's such a cool guy. He's totally game. So I'm very excited about this. We're going to do a real therapy session with somebody who's got a lot on the line. He's got a big, big evening ahead, his whole album. How long have you been working on this album, Nathan? Your whole life?
It depends how you count it, either 2 years or 4 years.
Yeah, it's a big deal, yeah, right? What if everybody, like, are you like, what if, like, people don't dance or no one shows up? Like, you're going to be like,
yeah,
that's going to be.
The nice thing is that, like, no matter what, tomorrow is going to be terrible. So
I love it.
Like, either, you know, if the show is great, tomorrow's going to be terrible. And if the show is terrible, then tomorrow's going to be terrible and it'll just be another thing that I'm upset about. So it'll be fine.
Well, Nathan has a pretty positive vibe, I'm going to tell you that. So I don't think anything's going to go wrong. But I want to just give you all the information. And then we're going to have our Nathan play a song with his lovely handmade hat. Okay. So first of all, Nathan's party is tonight. And I think it's going to be a really cool party. And because Nathan, when we were talking before, he has like people, he's got fans, folks. He's got fans. This party, I think, is going to actually be kind of packed. I have this feeling. Do you, Nathan?
I mean, I have to, for the sake of my sanity, I approach every show as if no one's going to be there. So
right.
If like...
Yeah, right.
You know, so I'm not thinking like...
I have a vibe about this,
it's
folks.
No one's going to be there and it's going to be great anyways, is
okay.
How I have to think
I may
about
even
it.
Come. I may even come. There's no cover, so I'm all there. Anyway, so it's at the Way Station, which is in Prospect Heights. The show starts at 8. You're going to have warm-up acts?
Yeah, there's...
Jugglers and...
No, it's other musical acts. I wish we had jugglers. But the other bands are awesome. The other bands are really great.
So there's going to be other bands, and then you're going to be on a 10.
Yep.
Okay, so you guys should go to that because I think it'll be really fun for sure, and it's going to be exciting. And Nathan's album, which you can find on nathanlee.bandcamp.com. That's Lee, L-E-I-G-H. Don't forget that, all right? It's called... The name of his album is The Ordinary Eternal Machinery?
Yeah, it's a Leonard Cohen line from his book Beautiful Losers.
Okay. Yeah. So before we delve into Nathan's psyche, we're going to have him play a song. Do you want to introduce the song, Nathan?
Sure. This is a song called Never Be Normal.
Perfect.
Appropriate for the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a song about protest and just sort of a general, being defiantness, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Rebelliousness.
Indeed, but yeah.
But defiance, which is actually probably a more thoughtful, considered form of rebellion.
Yeah, it's okay. Defiance in the face of... state oppression.
All right.
Yay.
All right. Let's do it. Yay. It's Nathan Lee, folks, right here in the studio.
All right. Here goes. We were dancing on a Saturday. It was a fine weekend to celebrate. We'd made through the winter without any place to stay. Salute one finger to the boys in blue. Should've known what they were gonna do. Should've seen that long arm coming down. Split normalcy in two. Now I know I will never be normal. Never be normal. I'll never be no. I will never be normal. Never be normal. I'll never be. Shout FTP, ACAB, I found myself a wheezing banshee. Outset at ease towards an enemy I couldn't even see. And each night I'm dreaming of the first, each rehearsal it gets worse. Now I'm barely asleep at all, ain't got no charm to break the curse. Though I know I will never be normal, never be normal, and never be no. I will never be normal, never be normal, I'll never be. Drop the metaphors, the open talk of war, unsettled scores. Some scars are simply real, and I got three or four. One on my back, two on my side, one busted lung and battered pride. And I won't hide it for decorum's sake. No, I'm not ashamed, I tried. You'll find me dancing every Saturday till they take my life away. Even though I know I will never be normal, never be normal, and never be no. I will never be normal, never be normal, I'll never be no. I will never be normal, never be normal, I'll never be no. I will never be normal, never be normal, I'll never be.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love that so much. You know, I'll never be normal. That would be good. Maybe we can make a deal licensing that for because I need an intro
music?
For this.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's
maybe
all yours.
We should do that.
Absolutely.
Wow. That was so perfect. And I really the music was great. I really appreciate the writing very, very much.
Thank you.
I thought the writing was, really outstanding on that song.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
That's not a requirement in music, but I really felt it in this particular song and probably your other songs.
Oh, hopefully.
You care about writing. You're a good writer.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are crap, but,
No. Well, not any of them. Well,
hopefully not all of them.
not the ones that you're going to be singing here.
No, nor no tonight way. Or on the album. But
no,
I've definitely
the crap
written...
ones are like...
Yeah, those are on my hard drive. Nobody
no,
gets to
like
hear
those. When you have a bad date and you don't want to be around, or somebody, you want to get them to leave your apartment, that's when you bring out the bad songs.
Oh, that's actually
everybody
a good idea.
Needs
that's a really
a bad,
good idea.
Bad song.
Yeah.
So here's what I know about Nathan Foulkes, is that he's never been in therapy. That's right, Nathan.
Yeah,
right?
That's correct.
Oh, and you know what else before I go forward is that I forgot. You know what I forgot? I forgot to tell people that this is fucking Radio Free Brooklyn, which is an incredible radio station. And we accept donations. As a matter of fact, you could give us like $1. That would be enough. We just want to connect with you. And if you donate any money at all to my show in particular on our RadioFreeBrooklyn.com page, and to my show in particular, there's a button you can push. I will give you, and you want like your anything advertised, a shout out, anything, I will do it for you. I am here for you. Anyway, I just had to say that. So I did my job. Now let's get back to you, Nathan. So it's really interesting that, and you also seem like you present in a very positive, well, you seem kind of well adjusted, like a little bit in a threatening way for a therapist. Are you really well adjusted?
Well, I mean, I think in some ways, the thing that I have that I use is I sort of use art and music as therapy. So like anytime I have something that I need to work out, like that's a song right there. So like that's sort of my way of working through things that allows me to present as a reasonably well-adjusted human being.
Right. So let's like dig into all that and ruin all your creativity.
Absolutely.
Are you one of those people that believes that like if you go to therapy, it's going to ruin your creativity or somehow
no,
take
I'm just,
away from it? Or you just...
I'm broke and I don't have a lot of free time.
Oh, well, that's good. So we're here now. So anyway, what kinds of things, if you were to be in therapy, is there anything that, you know, that has been on your mind that you think like, let's free associate here. What kind of thing, you know, like what, if I was to say to you, why did you come into therapy? What do you think you would say? What are some things?
Oh, I mean, it's a pretty big laundry list. I literally just made an album about surviving trauma and stuff like that. So, you know, there's a lot.
There's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot going on.
Okay, so what kind of trauma? What was the album? The album is about surviving trauma. Tell us about that.
Well, the album is about basically. I had sort of two incredibly awful years, starting with the thing that this song was about, which is about getting beaten by the NYPD.
What?
That was the thing. And my lung collapsed from that.
What?
Yeah.
From being beaten?
Yeah. I have a pre-existing lung condition that was exacerbated about it. So
did you know about the lung condition?
Yeah. That wasn't the first time that it ever collapsed.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But then from that, like having surgery and then ending up in like a really messed up abusive relationship and escaping that. And all of those 2 years are sort of all the things that the album is about.
Right. So you're a hetero, I'm guessing, right?
I'm bi.
You're bi?
Yeah.
Was the relationship with a male or female?
Female.
And are you currently single or?
No, I'm actually right now in arguably the first, but certainly the most healthy relationship I've ever been in. It's fantastic.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Is that a female or a male?
Female.
And how long has that been?
A little over 2 years.
Good sign.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, sounds like you're good at recovering. So what happened? Like, how did you, that must have been awful. So you haven't ever talked to a therapist about getting beaten? You must have PTSD from that.
I mean... To some degree, yeah.
So what happened? How would a nice young man like you get beaten?
Well, it was during...
White man. I'm just going to say that. A nice white man.
It was during the Occupy 6 month anniversary. We were in Zuccotti Park and, you know, there had been sort of talks throughout the activist community about reoccupying the park on that day. And someone erected a tent and... I, in my sort of radical fervor, was like, yeah, let's do this. So the cops started moving in to clear the park, and me and probably about 40, 50 other people, we all linked arms around the tent because someone was sleeping inside it. The cops started moving in, and, you know, I sort of had that moment of like, oh, shit, this is about to really go south. And I looked at my friend Joe, who I was sitting next to, and I was like, I can't afford to get arrested right now. I have, I had a workshop for a play I was writing the next day. It's like, he just looked at me and said, then run. So I got up, and as I was trying to, you know, they're shouting disperse, and as I was literally trying to disperse, six cops sort of grabbed me and started pushing me and pushed me out of the way. And it was awful.
So did they, like, when you say grabbed and pushed, so what did that feel like? Like, what was that experience like? What happened, really? I mean, your lung collapsed, right?
Yeah, I mean, pushing,
it doesn't sound like a little push. Like,
no,
what happened?
It wasn't delicate. I mean,
were they really aggressive out for blood, as they say, or like, what was that like?
I mean, it's hard to tell what intent was, obviously, but certainly it seemed like it certainly seemed like there was anger, and, you know, I can't imagine why one would manhandle someone trying to comply with your orders if you weren't at least on some level malicious. So,
and did that happen to? So what? Like, I mean, it vaguely sounds like it made the news, right? And I kind of remember.
No, it actually, well, me specifically didn't. There were a lot of people that got it a lot worse on that day. You know,
I mean, that incident.
That day.
I think we heard about it.
Made
yeah.
the news. And there was a couple people were pretty badly messed up from it. So it for a lot of people in the New York City, like, radical and activist community, it's remembered as a pretty dark day.
So were people? So what about your lung? Did it collapse at that time, or what happened?
So the the next day, I was having a lot of difficulty breathing, and my lung had collapsed once before really badly, and I'd had surgery on it. And that sort of whole week I was doing my workshop, so I was, like, kind of ignoring it. And when that wrapped up the next week, I went to see a doctor, and they took a look at it and did some x-rays. And it wasn't bad enough that I needed surgery again, but it was bad enough that I was out of capacity for a couple weeks, and then...
So you had to, like, stay in and stuff like that?
Yeah, I was pretty much, like, sitting on my couch watching a lot of Stargate.
So when that happened, did you just go home that day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went home right
No, but I mean, like, was it like you went home and you were okay until, like... I mean, was it like you didn't... Was it like this really panicky situation and you went home and you were like, oh my God, or was it like you were like, that sucked, and then you went home and then that came up again?
I mean, I like, don't remember a lot from that day. It was definitely like, it exists in my memory in a very blurry capacity. But yeah, like, I definitely remember standing around sort of screaming at the cops for a solid half hour afterwards, and then going home and getting like 2 hours of sleep and getting up the next day and having to pretend to be a, you know, professional.
So what did that experience feel like? Like, when you were screaming at them, were you scared? Were you out of control? Were you...
I mean, I was like seeing red. I really don't...
So being, like, being handled that way was scary and angry making.
Oh, it was terrifying.
And was it like a scene where the cops, you were yelling at the cops, so was there a scene? Was it like...
Well, there was I mean, it was chaos in general. They were rampaging through the park and throwing people around left and right. So, like, it wasn't... Certainly, like, my experience of that moment wasn't the focal point at all. Like
there right, because it was just a big shit show.
Yeah, it was.
So what about, did that affect you? Does that affect you today when you see cops or anybody wants to touch you? Or how does that affect you now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I, you know, I still am involved in activism and still, oh, by the way, just so you know, on Saturday, keep an eye out for McDonald's. Their bathrooms are open.
Oh,
so
thanks.
What you do is you, like, you just break out of the march, you run into McDonald's, and you come
thanks.
Back.
Thanks. Good tip. Yeah. That's what you guys
protest
do.
Protest tip.
All right,
that's what you do.
Oh, good. Thanks.
Anyways.
Like, okay, no, McDonald's.
Yeah.
I'll remember that.
If you see one,
that's good.
Like,
it makes
if you see
me
one
just
on your walk, just, like, flag it in your brain and be like, okay.
No, I feel better
I have to
just
pee,
knowing
that's
that.
Where I'm
going. That's comforting. Thank
yeah,
you very
the
much. There, I got the therapy. Good.
Yeah.
Good. We're done now. No.
Yeah, see. So all the problems are solved.
So that's affected you with policemen or with in other situations?
I still, you know, like if I get pulled over, I tour a lot, and so I'm driving a lot.
Right.
And, you know, I drive a PT Cruiser, so it can't exactly
that's
speed.
Cute.
But you know, the speed limit is like something I aspire to, anyways. But if I get pulled over for like a taillight out or something like that, I definitely enter like a pretty serious like panic mode if I have to interact with the police.
Oh, okay. So it's really changed your attitude about the police or your relationship, the way that it's a trigger now. Police are
absolutely
a trigger,
absolutely.
And they're everywhere. And they're going to be around even more, I bet.
Yeah.
So anyway, so let's hear about, that's horrible. I'm sorry that we're all sorry. That, you know, there's good police. I don't like to condemn all of the police, but that's a shame that that happened.
Well, I don't think, you know, having had enough time, there was definitely a time where I was like very, very anti all police. And I've now
from that experience?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I've definitely sort of come around to more like the individual humans aren't the problem. It's the it's the institutions. It's the way that we don't hold them accountable. It's the fact that, you know, they are absolutely trained to do whatever they feel is necessary in the moment, and there's never any sort of accountability. There's never any sort of prosecution or anything when they step over the line.
Sure, for sure.
And that gives people permission to feel like they can do stuff. And so that's the problem. It's not.
And the training. And,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a social problem. It's not just it's not them as people.
Yeah.
It's social.
It's a
so let's talk about your relationship. So were you dating? So you had a destructive relationship. Were you, let's use the word toxic because that's so trendy now. So was that happening at the time or did that happen afterwards?
No, that was about a year or 6 months or so. It was about a year. Yeah.
Afterwards, do you think that maybe that incident with the police made you feel vulnerable and you wound up like connecting with somebody who wasn't going to be in your best interest? Maybe you felt.
Oh no! It's a pretty long story.
All right. Well, let's hear.
I'll try and give you the shortest.
Let's have a version of it. Yeah.
Here's the like super Cliff's Notes version. Is after that, about 4 months later, I ended up having surgery on my lung and having part of it removed.
You did have,
Or it was 2 months later, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that led to a breakup with the relationship I was in at the time. Which is sort of a whole complicated thing out of its
the
own.
The person didn't handle that well.
Well, it was just all of a sudden asking someone to be in a caregiver
and it was
role,
too intense
too
you
much.
Just weren't too much
it was you know
it wasn't solid enough
yeah it wasn't like I understand why that relationship ended.
Do you think you didn't want her? Was she resistant or did you not like feeling dependent on her or whatever, feeling like that you were that vulnerable to her?
It very well could have been a little bit.
Could have been
a
both.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, it ended. Yeah, that's a tough thing to get through for anybody.
We had been living together, so that sent me like on this sort of year of massive instability where I was like floating around. You know, there's a line in one of my songs in the album that's literal, but it's in 2 years I lived 13 places, and over those 2 years I lived in 13 different places.
Wow.
And suddenly someone who I dated in high school sort of came back into my life. And
wow.
It was like that felt like the stability that I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. It just deeply wasn't.
So how did that person, where'd you go to high school?
I grew up outside of Boston.
Mm-hmm. So that person happens to be in New York?
No, that person was living on Cape Cod.
Did you have a long-distance relationship?
For about 3 months, and then I actually moved to Cape Cod for a couple months.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Nice. What were you thinking?
Not thinking, clearly.
So what was the deal with the chick? How did you connect, and what were you thinking and all that?
Well, I mean, I was just thinking, like, oh, this is, like, that thing that was like that, you know, sort of the one who got away situation coming mm-hmm. back and be like, oh, this is like this perfect storybook thing. And it was, you know, as things got bad, you kind of like, I had romanticized the story of that mm-hmm. so much that I'd be like, well, yeah, I mean, this is terrible, but the story is so good.
So I you kept, were hopeful, like, yeah, optimistic.
Kept like making excuses and making excuses and making excuses as things got
worse. How
did
you reconnect with somebody from high school?
I work a lot in theater on the Cape, so I was up there.
So you mean you were traveling there for a job and you reconnected?
Yeah.
So do you think there was something in you that, so moving to Cape Cod isn't actually all that odd, moving back in a way. Is your family still there?
Yeah. My parents live in Chatham.
Right is now. There something in Chatham? So is there anything that you think that you might've been like feeling like wanting to go back to high school, like wanting to have that feeling again? Or what was high school like for you?
High school was...
Did you enjoy high school? It's okay if you did.
Good and bad. I mean, there was a lot of stuff. There was a lot of, like, sort of, you know, self-hatred closetiness going on. But, like, as far as, like, you know, bullying and shit like that, like, I didn't really experience a ton of that in high school. Certainly probably no more than, like... your average right. person or your average slightly weirdo artist person. But high school wasn't a bad time. It wasn't a good time either, I guess. It was.
It wasn't like you were like had like a ton of friends and you were real happy there or.
I mean, I had a group of friends and actually like.
It was okay.
Yeah. I'm still friends with a lot of my high school friends. Half of them play on my record.
So it was a good time. So there was a sense of community and stability there that was something that you had had some need for, obviously. Anybody would in your situation at that point. And how old are you? You're a young man.
I'm 33. I'm not that young.
Oh. But
yeah.
It's young, but you look, it's the hat.
Oh, yeah. And I shaved this morning, so.
Is your family live there?
Well, my sister lives outside of Boston now, and my parents live on Cape.
So. Yeah, and you get along with your parents?
Mm-hmm.
And is there something, and it's comforting, like, if you, to be around them, I bet, if you get along with them. Or it's complicated. it just sounds like there was something stable, something comfortable about it.
It was, you know, I had gone through so much instability over 2 years that it was all of a sudden someone offering stability and to some degree demanding it felt really attractive and really necessary in that.
She really wanted you to move in, is that it?
Yeah.
And you moved in with her, I'm guessing. And so did you live near your family at that time?
I was one town over from them.
So all good, and no, none of this, like, you know, how am I going to find a room in Bushwick kind of scrounging?
Right, it was like all the stuff.
Just easy, right?
Yeah.
Let's relax.
All the stuff that's, like, stressful about New York is like, great, that's, you know.
I could see how that could happen, especially if it's an attractive female that you liked. And how did it go bad, or what do you think you missed? Let's see if we can. This is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, let's see what you missed in there, so we can see if we can unearth like what in your childhood made you miss it going wrong. And I can do that in 20 minutes. You think 15, 20 minutes? Let's. I'll tell you what. Before we do that, let's remind people again. Remind myself that you're listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm here with Nathan Lee, who's having his launch party or whatever record release party.
Release party is the word. Yeah.
For his new album today, called Ordinary Eternal Machinery, and The party tonight is going to be at the Way Station in Prospect Heights. Party starts at 8. Nathan will be on at 10. And there is no covered charge. You unemployed people listening to me. No fucking covered charge and great music. So we're going to hear give to my Patreon page. We're supposed to say that. So, Nathan, song number two. What song are you going to play for us?
I mean, I guess I'll do the song that's about that, since that's what we're talking about.
Oh, great. Awesome.
A song called Beaches in Winter. It's
beautiful.
Being
I like it.
Stuck.
I like that title.
In a place, in a touristy place at a time when it's not touristy and it's desolate. Upbeat, cheery song. It's a long road between where I am and where I want to be. And I don't know if I'll ever make it. Keep your eyes closed. Do you see the man that you want to see? If you still don't, maybe I can fake it. I am the mess in this mirror. I am this frozen landscape. I am my doubt, my fear. Someday I swear I'll escape this place. Slip our anchors, let the ocean carry us away from here, where it don't hurt, where we're not haunted. And it's my curse, oh my lot is wanderlust and fear. And it's all yours, honey, if you want it. I am the mess in this mirror. I am this frozen landscape. I am my doubt, my fear. Someday I swear I'll escape this place. I am the salt in this water. I am foundations of sand. I am the beaches in winter. But I'm doing the best I can. But I am the lighthouse in the harbor. I have no keeper or purpose. But I am the ice frozen river. There's life just beneath the surface. I am this frozen landscape. I am my doubt, my fear. Someday I swear I'll escape this place.
Wow, that was really moving. That was beautiful. That was so meaningful after hearing what you were saying. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
I was dancing a little bit. Did you notice that?
No, I
was
moving. I usually have my eyes closed when I say
that. Yeah, oh, you do? Is that what you... But really, it was really, I mean, it was physically moving and emotionally moving. I really enjoyed that. Thank you so much. I feel like I'm really lucking out, man. I'm like definitely lucking out. I got my concert.
Well, and if you come tonight, you get to... The first and last time my sax player and my band we were screwing around, and I made some joke about how I bought this new guitar when Prince died because I wanted to be able to play like Prince. And he was like, well, how come you're not shredding on any of the songs? It's like, because I don't know how. So So he's making me take an epic solo in that song.
That's a good incentive. I'd like to see that.
Crazy
like
epic shredding that. Stuff. I've been
oh,
working
that'll
on
be fun.
Hopefully, I haven't practiced.
Are you nervous? But you know, that's good. That's good. I'm glad you. You know, it's good that you have somebody around who, like you, that you embrace people that push you. This is a good thing. Embrace people that push you creatively. All of us, we need to do that. So what went wrong there? What went wrong? So what happened? How did it like?
I mean, again, kind of Cliff's Notes version because it's
sure
a lot,
it's complicated. But, yeah, it's two but, people and lots of feelings and history.
Yeah, so like
I get it.
This was the third time we dated. The first time she had been awful to me. The second time I'd been awful to her.
But was like this since high school? Or?
Yeah, we dated like
you
once
dated
in, high,
in
school,
high school,
once in college, and then once 3 years ago. And you know, there's a lot of lingering resentment, I think, from her, particularly about how things had gone down when we were in college. And,
which is, did you ditch her in college?
I mean, it was.
Did
one
you
of
cheat
things...
on her? You cheated on her,
well,
of course.
Sort of.
Okay.
Here's the thing that like is that I had just gotten out of this relationship and I wasn't ready to be with somebody.
Right.
And so she was like very, very heavily pushing us to be in a relationship and I wasn't.
Right.
So we were this like I know this sounds like a technicality, but like for a 20-year-old this was my thought process was like, well, we weren't actually dating. So like either 20-year-old Nathan would have said I didn't cheat on her. 33-year-old Nathan is like, yeah, I cheated on her. But
with one person or you, did you have another girlfriend in college or something?
No, I wasn't like double timing really. But I wasn't
no,
being
let's
faithful.
Make a distinction. Here.
Yeah.
No, so you slept with other women? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
A 20-year-old college student. And which did she, you guys didn't go to the same college?
No.
Yeah. Where'd she go to college?
Where did she end up finishing? I actually don't remember.
Where did you go?
I went to UConn.
Okay. So you thought you were committed and you probably were kind of, but you kind of pushed the limit. You kind of, and then what happened? So you told her or?
Oh yeah. I mean, she found out and that.
And then you had a big fight and you broke up then?
I mean, more or less. It dragged on. There was other stuff, but
yeah. So that was, and then now like a bunch of years went by, five at least, and then you started dating again, right?
Yeah,
is that what we're
ten
saying?
Years actually.
Ten years, and then you gave it another 10 years.
Yeah.
So you thought, oh man, this, yeah, I could see that. So what happened then?
So, you know, there was like a lot of lingering trust issues and like basically what would happen is if I had any female friend who in any passing way could be compared to her, she would like freak out if she knew I was talking to them. And she would like go through my phone like and what's really crazy, like what's actually like wild about the whole thing was like, and it, because that was how I figured out that it was all about their resemblance to her, because there were people that I had been with that she had no problem with, like guys that I'd been with that I was still friends with, she had no problem with.
Mm-hmm.
And like girls who didn't resemble her in any way, she had no problem with, but like, you know, girls who like if you kind of squinted and they were far in the distance, you might like.
Sorry, that's sort of not funny.
No,
slightly
I mean, it's funny
not
now.
Funny, but it's very funny.
It was awful at the
I
time.
I like that kind of neurosis she had.
It's. I can laugh about it now because things are fine now. But yeah, so there's like a lot of shit where, you know.
So here's what I'm wondering about that. It sounds like, okay, so she was insecure and she was worried about people, about you, but not just you, cheating on her. So did she have other, I mean, whether you, okay, so let's say you were 20 years old and you cheated on her. Let's just call it the worst case scenario.
Yeah. I mean,
okay, that's fine. You're 20. You get it. Yeah. We're over it.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to understand about her and you is that 10 years later, was she still like, I think it's like in my judgmental therapist way, I think it's crazy to hold on to somebody who cheated on you as a 20-year-old thinking that they're going to cheat on you 10 years later or cheat on anybody 10 years later. I mean, be that kind of person, not a more mature person that wouldn't do that if they were in a committed relationship and believed in committed relationships. Or did she have a series of boyfriends that cheated on her? Was there a lot of lying and infidelity in her life? Or what do you think that was about?
I mean, I think there was a lot of stuff going on. And you know,
how much was you and how much was her? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I definitely think there's stuff that was me. I'm not going to absolve myself. But I think a lot of it sort of stemmed from, like, she had a kid. So there was a lot of, like, sort of being protective of, like, her family unit kind of stuff going on. Like,
that's would always complicated.
That would always be how she would, like, frame it. Like,
she had a kid. That's complicated. That's really complicated. So did she like kind of use that as a protective shield a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anytime, it's basically like what would end up happening, the big way that it would end up playing out was like about once a week or so, she'd like kick me out of the house. Usually for some sort of imagined infraction.
And then what would you do?
But it would always be framed. I'd just go stay in, like, on my parents' couch.
Oh, okay.
It would always be framed in this, like, you know, I can't have this around my kid. That would always be sort of the way that she would frame it. And so, you know, it was that thing where, like, it's a little bit like what's going on politically right now, but, like, where you're like, I can't tell. It's happening so much, and so much is happening so quickly that I can't tell if I'm being unreasonable or if they're being unreasonable.
Right.
And so you just get, like, swept into it. And by the end of it, I mean, like, it's, again, that thing of, like, trauma where it's, like, sort of fuzzy in my brain. Mm. Like, it almost feels like it, like, didn't totally happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, friends of mine, like, recount afterwards that, like, I had become just, like, a totally shell-shocked person by the end of it. I was just, like, afraid of everything and doing...
What do you mean, afraid of everything?
Oh, just, like, you know, couldn't do anything that might set her off, like...
Oh, you were being controlled by her.
Yeah, like, anything, everything that, like, really policing my language, really, like, policing, like, you know... like, I would, like, edit stories to edit out people that might upset people. It was, like, it got, like, I just sort of became this, like, very nervous, very, like, agitated person for a while.
So you really allowed yourself to be around somebody who was controlling.
Oh, yeah.
And let me ask somebody. So she had a kid. Did she change a lot? Was she married? Like, how'd she have the kid? Was she married? Did she have a relationship? Was that guy around? Or where the
father was around. They broke up while she was pregnant. She actually left him for his cousin.
Stability isn't her thing.
Yeah. Not really so much.
Did she get pregnant on purpose? Or do you think she really wanted to have a kid? Or what do you think? Like, how did that go down?
I mean, I just don't think she, like, something that she said to me at one point was that she didn't think it was going to be that hard.
Cool. How was it for you being around somebody with a kid?
You know, weirdly, like, and I'm, you know, now I'm sort of back on my, like, not really interested in having children train. For a long time, I was very absolute on that. And so sort of discovered that, like, actually, like, it was kind of all right, the parenting aspects of it. It was the everything else aspects of it. But that also made it confusing because for the same way that she's like, you know, I can't have drama around my child. I was also very like, well, I got to, you know, I know this is terrible, but I got to tough it out because there's this kid that started calling me dad and shit. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Like, there.
Wow.
Yeah. It was super messed up.
When you made the decision to move in with her, like, what was in your head? Were you, like, totally, like, in love, or what were you thinking? Were you just like, oh my God, this is the person for me, or I'll work it out, or I'm not afraid of the kid. Like, what was your mindset?
I mean, a lot of it was from her. There was a lot, like, there was a lot of pressure on, like, you know, I don't want to move to New York. I don't know that, like, I couldn't raise my kid here. And, like, the sort of constant, like, you're never going to be happy here. You're never going to be happy settling down. And, like, I'm kind of an obstinate person in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the best way to get me to do something is to tell me that I can't do it. Mm. So,
do you think she knew that?
Oh, who knows? I've spent a lot of time over the years trying to decide whether some of the more messed up things she did were deliberate or, like,
well,
just
she has got good instincts for it. Let's just say that doesn't really matter.
I mean, she's certainly a talented manipulator. Whether
she's got good instincts. So what were you thinking though? Were you thinking like I'm just so in? Because you made a lot of from what I'm imagining, it must have been a lot of huge sacrifices. But were you thinking like I'm just in love with this person? They're so perfect for me. I'll work it out. Or what were you thinking?
I mean, I was just thinking like we're gonna, you know, this is the future. I got to make this step now while we're figure it out. I was living in an apartment that had a lot of issues and that I wasn't really happy in. And it was sort of like you have somebody telling you like, you know, I need you to prove to me that that the future is something that this is going to work down the line. And I'm like, okay, great. This is how I'll prove it.
But part of maybe what it was that you weren't in a living situation that you were happy with.
Oh, sure. I mean that.
And like, she knew that too, right?
Yeah, that made it easy to kind of.
Right.
Fly.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that seeming like here's a train that looks good to get on, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting and because I mean everybody's it's not the worst. Jesus, this is just all learning experiences, not horrible ones really in the big picture, but it seems as if you know, it wasn't like to me, if you're going to like move from, you know, Brooklyn, New York City to Cape Cod with somebody and be a dad, like to me, that would be like, oh, my God, this is exactly what I want. Like, that's a huge move to make with some ambivalence. But you didn't have any. It wasn't like you had anything to lose more than the.
I mean,
it was like you didn't have
a very unstable place in my life. And
yeah,
I think that was it. Like, this was
right.
Like, I was craving stability, and this was screaming stability. I mean, literally screaming stability.
Right. And she took on all the responsibility in that. She's like, we have to make this work. Not like. So, in other words, she kind of took the weight off your shoulders by putting her foot down.
More or less, yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, great, I can absolve myself of having to make this choice.
Yeah, you didn't have to make the choice. I could see how that could happen.
Yeah,
but it's also like she wasn't actually being that protective of herself or her child either.
No, I mean...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that sounds like a really learning, that sounds like a learning experience.
Yeah. I mean, it took a while to, like, after we broke up, I went on tour for about 5 months and,
oh, that's good.
Yeah. Like, it was just pretty much me alone in a car traveling the country. I went to 48 states and, that really gave me
wow, that's awesome.
Like,
that's fantastic. That's a great way to deal with that kind of
like,
you're good, you've got good coping skills for
like,
sure.
By the time I got home, I was like, all right, I'm like a person again, and like was able to sort of like stabilize and regroup and like
great, use your creativity, your art to overcome a lot, which is really great. So controlling women, so you're in a healthy relationship now, it sounds like it, and so what about controlling women? Do you have controlling, is your mom controlling? Let's see if there are controlling, if controlling women is more of an issue, because we only have, can you believe this, we have 10 minutes left. We've got 5 minutes to wrap this up, and then I want you to do one more song before we we check out of here. So what's your mom like? What's your relationship with your mom like?
Oh, well, I mean, my mom and I now have a very good relationship.
Okay, well.
I think when I was younger, it was not as great.
And what does that mean?
Well, I think in many ways she's a kind of classic Jewish mother.
Controlling!
Yeah.
Bitchy, manipulative, like your girlfriend. Let's just say it, folks. He just went for a woman just like his mother. No, I mean, what do I know? I have no training. I'm reminding you that in case you don't know that. I mean, you people, everyone. And, of course, you, Nathan, I have no training. You know this. So what about, was your mother controlling of your dad?
I mean.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Like, what does your dad do?
Well, they're both retired now.
But what did they do?
She was a teacher and he was a computer programmer.
Computer programmer?
Yeah.
And was he like a nerdy computer guy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she had a big personality?
Yeah.
And was she kind of sexy? Not to you, of course. Like, she was a chick, good at being a chick?
I don't know. I'm not going to...
We're not going to talk about your mom that way. Okay, never mind. But your mom was definitely, like, the dominant person.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Yeah,
she runs that house.
So you could have a natural tolerance for some that could feel normal to you, and it could also, I could see how you could be vulnerable to that. You want to keep an eye on that. So what about your girlfriend now? Is she controlling in any way?
No, that's actually why she's great. Or one of the many reasons. It's a pretty long list of reasons why she's great.
She going to be there tonight?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, and is she a musician as well? Or
she's an actor. She does. She sings on a couple of songs.
Oh, so she sings. What kind of stuff acting does she do?
She does like immersive and interactive theater.
Wow, I love interactive theater.
Yeah, she does some really really cool work.
Like what?
Probably the biggest thing that she's done in New York was about a year ago. She did this show called The Rocking Dead that was like this zombie apocalypse party.
Wow.
And they did two iterations of it. One was at a couple different venues in Midtown. The first one they did on the Frying Pan.
Oh, you know, I love that place. I think I heard about that.
It was really cool.
That was her idea?
No, it wasn't her idea.
But she was in it. That must have been awesome.
Part of the team that developed it.
And she helped develop it. Yeah.
Alyssa, who's actually directing one of my videos, she directed and sort of was her brainchild. But Nicole was my partner. She was part of the company and...
That sounds great.
Yeah. Wow. It was a really cool project.
Sounds like a good match there. So do you write? I like how, you know, I want to say this and then we're going to hear another song from you. But you know what I really liked about the last song was that I just find this creatively satisfying how there was a connection. Like I really had a sense of what you were talking about in your life and the song having like a really strong connection. And I really appreciate that.
Oh, thanks.
I thought that was really cool.
Like I said, like that's been the process of making this record has been like going through and really
very authentic
and unpacking and trying to look at some of the darker stuff that I've been through and try and like make some light out of it or find light through it and like look at it. Try and say like, well, that was put the trauma behind, put the bad stuff behind and say like, okay, well, what do I learn from that? What can I take from that? What's useful from that?
Lemons into lemonade. So we have 4 minutes left. I just, in case we don't have time to say goodbye, I'll say thanks that I really enjoyed having you on here.
Thank you.
I want to make sure that everybody goes and checks. I'm going to put all of your SoundCloud stuff on my Facebook page and when I post this episode. So go ahead. What's your last song here about?
I'm going to do a song that's completely not about any of that stuff. It's just fun because I want to end on a fun note. The song's called Most of My Heroes Are Pretty Damn Problematic, and it's about how everyone that I admire is terrible.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. Want to end on an upbeat note instead
good.
Of
so it,
more
yeah,
songs
kinda,
about how
I like
trauma
that.
Sucks.
It's kind of funny. Is it on this album?
It is on the record. I'm not sure if we're going to play it tonight. We rehearsed it on Tuesday. Uh-huh. It's just an acoustic song, so it's like We're going to play that one by ear. But
okay.
We are going to do the other ones tonight.
Okay, cool.
All right. Let's fade out on the great man myth of history. Carefully constructed biographies and the fashionably redacted sympathies and the fantasy that they're everything we can't be. 'Cause I'll never forget the time that I realized that lots of the things in our history textbooks are wrong. Like I'll never forget the time that I realized there's more than a little hypocrisy in Beatles songs. 'Cause John Lennon beat his wife and Woody Guthrie was a racist. Public enemy don't care much at all for Jews. And I don't know what's right. I still defend their work as artists. And if I had to, I don't know how I'd choose. 'Cause most of my heroes are pretty damn problematic. Yeah, most of my heroes are pretty damn problematic. And I like to pretend Bowie never was obsessed with Nazis. 'Cause there aren't many male bi role models, and we need more male bi role models, so I'll even forgive him for Tin Machine being lazy. And he says he regrets all the things that he said back in 76, and man, cocaine's one hell of a drug. And I don't know if that's a good enough fix, I just know I'm complicit in sweeping it under the rug. And John Lennon beat his wife, and Woody Guthrie was a racist. Public enemy don't care much at all for Jews. And I don't know what's right. Can I defend their work as artists? If I had to, I don't know how I'd choose. When most of my heroes are pretty damn problematic. Yeah, most of my heroes are pretty damn problematic. And when Jefferson wrote, all men were created equal. Well, he owned other men as property. His whole fortune was built on slavery. So let's not pretend our history's all that simple. 'Cause few of us live up to the things that we stand for. Even Ian MacKay said some pretty dumb shit as a kid. And if he can't live up to the things that he stands for, does that invalidate all the good things that Fugazi did? And John Lennon beat his wife, and Woody Guthrie was a racist. Public enemy don't care much at all for Jews. And I don't know what's right. I still defend their work as artists. And if I had to, I don't know how I'd choose. 'Cause most of my heroes are pretty damn problematic. Yeah, most of my heroes are pretty damn problematic. Most of my heroes are pretty damn problematic.
Whoa, that was awesome. That's amazing. God, I didn't even know that stuff about those guys.
Yeah, all terrible people wrote some of the best songs in history, though.
Wow. All right. Well, anyway, we have 1 minute left, so I just want to say thanks again. I want to remind everybody, you guys got to go to this party tonight at the Way Station in Prospect Heights. I may actually go. I think this would be so much fun to see you perform on stage.
It's gonna be,
and go to our website, Radio Free Brooklyn. Listen to everything. My archives are there. And, you know, just like give us like a dollar, because any money, we just want to connect, and that would make us feel good. That would be like an emotional pat on the back. I hope you all, I hope we're all safe this weekend.
Yeah.
And, stay away from the news. Stay away from the news. Just, you know what it is we've got to do? We've got to be really grateful for what we have and for each other.
Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit about